Senior Focus. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Khoury. I'm your presenter for this edition of Senior Focus. Kia ora tātou, and it's Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori, and I can't believe it's been 50 years since we began this week celebration, which has turned into now a month. And it's a great opportunity to give it a go and to sprinkle your English sentences with the odd kupu Māori. It can be really fun, even mixing up mountains and sharks in one sentence, as I know someone did once, and embarrass themselves in front of an audience. But today I have in the studio with me Amy Cremins from Yes Disability. Welcome, Amy.
Kia ora. Thank you for having me.
And Amy is here because although she's a wonderful 25-year-old leading great work in the field of progress around disability issues, she's also very aware of how things that can be changed about access and participation impact people of all ages, and everyone benefits. And I do believe there's considerable overlap between the Age Friendly movement and the Disability Matters movement. So we shall have a very interesting discussion today. Introducing you, Amy, I want to stress that you, not just your age, but your amazing roles that you play and the amazing life that you've led. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about the things that have made you the passionate person you are.
Absolutely. Thank you. So I grew up experiencing a physical disability that causes severe widespread chronic pain and laxity in my limbs, which means I have mobility issues and I use a stick a lot of the time, a walking cane. So I experienced a lot of barriers growing up. And so as I went into my teens and then my early 20s, I became very passionate about not only finding my own voice as a disabled person, but also helping others to find their voice. So I am currently the social media and communications facilitator at Yes Disability Resource Centre, and I am also the chair for the National ILED Committee, which is a part of Yes Disability, and I'm honoured to have these opportunities.
Thanks. And facing barriers being no stranger to you, you will be the most amazing person to help others find their voice and share. And so I think that's really the thing that's I've been impressed with, seeing you in action at the National Health Coalition Hui at Te Mahuruhuri Marae recently. And that was in front of the Director of Health, of Public Health, from Te Whatuora, and a number of leading lights in public health throughout New Zealand were at that meeting. So, and you did us all proud. And people were really sitting up and taking great note as you led that panel discussion. So it's wonderful to have you with us. And today I want to talk to you about the draft strategy for disability, for disabled people in New Zealand, and what's behind that. What's the vision for the strategy, and what can we do towards giving feedback that will help bring it about in a more concrete form?
So currently Faikaha are running a public consultation surrounding the draft New Zealand Disability Strategy, which is being renewed. The draft of the strategy was released last month, and the Ministry for Disabled People, Faikaha, are asking for feedback from the disability community. This feedback will shape the final copy of the New Zealand Disability Strategy. So the vision for the strategy is for New Zealand to be an accessible and equitable society for disabled people and their whānau, a place where disabled people thrive, lead, and participate in all aspects of life. This draft has been developed by the Ministry in collaboration with other government agencies, disabled people, and the wider disability community. This public consultation period allows for the disability community to provide feedback surrounding the efficacy of the contents of the draft disability strategy.
Thanks. And I understand that this draft strategy focuses on seven key principles. So I thought it would be good to rattle through these and actually tease out some of the ideas, particularly the first one, and is fairly obvious, accessibility. I think most of us understand physical barriers, but there are often complex barriers that occur. Like, for example, it's not just a mobility issue. Sometimes it's a visual issue. Can you actually see or identify different slopes and different gradations in the floor? And there can be quite disastrous consequences when you can't see these things, or when you have difficulties because you're lightheaded, your visual field is not accurate.
Absolutely. And there's also a more complex element with regards to barriers such as attitudinal and societal barriers. There are some pre-existing attitudes and beliefs regarding disability that can lead to someone facing barriers in gaining employment, for example, or education. And I believe that there's some overlap between the disability community experiencing ableism and the aging community experiencing ageism, which it also has to do with the pre-existing notions and ideas that society can have regarding the aging population.
Yes. And the second principle that comes into view is choice and control. And that's something after my own heart, thinking about locus of control. Is your locus internal or external? And how do you exercise choice and control in your life? And are you allowed to? Are you permitted to? But also, do you permit yourself? I think those are key questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Choice and control is something that is incredibly important to our community, especially the intellectually disabled community or the learning disability community who may face difficulties in their learning and as a result may experience people not wanting them to have control and choice over their own lives, which is unfortunately something that a lot of us experience and something that needs to change.
Now, the equity and cultural inclusion and intersectionality, that principle springs to mind as perhaps a fractured conversation at the moment because of the culture wars and things going on in the media. Would you like to comment on this principle?
I think that there's a lot of division going on right now, and there's a lot of people who are upset, and a lot of them rightly so. I think that what's important is, especially in the disability community, to acknowledge intersectionality where it and cultural inclusion where it matters. So a lot of our members in ILEAD are say Pacifica and disabled. We have intersectionality between disability and the rainbow community. So equity is hugely important to our community and a way that we can make sure that everyone is allowed the same opportunities.
Mm. And that leads on to the human rights principle. And we're, of course, we have our Bill of Rights and we are signed up to certain human rights at the UN and so on. But what application of human rights would this strategy focus on specifically, do you think?
I think that there's a lot of different rights. However, specifically, this strategy cites the UNCRPD, which outlines the rights for disabled people, which can include a right to housing, rights to healthcare rights to respect and dignity, which will be further down in this principles list. So it is the UNCRPD is specifically what this draft is referencing in regards to human rights.
Thanks. You know, that's clear. It's pretty all-inclusive, I would imagine, actually. It's very hard to rule out rights at this point. The actual UN document that was passed a few years back is quite a sound document and will be obviously a key platform within this strategy. So participation and inclusion is principle 5, and that's something that we look at in the senior community extensively, but I'm just wondering how it's being shaped up here.
Right, so a lot of young disabled people are used to participation and inclusion looking like being pushed to the back of a classroom with minimal support. So the student would be participating technically and included technically. However, they are not receiving the support that they need to fully participate and be included in education. So that is something we are extremely wary of, the words participation and inclusion within the disability community. So this would focus on true participation and inclusion where disabled people are provided with the supports that they need to fully be included and fully participate in all areas of life, including education and employment and society in general.
Hmm. Yeah, and I would imagine housing would be the most critical, because the proportion of housing that's accessible is extremely low. And it cannot meet the needs of the disabled in New Zealand, except a very small minority. I know on this show in the past, we've actually had a discussion about a young woman who actually secured employment in Tauranga, but could not move into the job because she could not get a property that she could afford to rent with an accessible shower. And she ended up having to have a shower erected on a deck outside the normal boundaries of the unit so that she could actually live there and go to the job. And that is about, you know, the cutting edge of things, given that the level of accessibility of what's out there is about 2% of housing in the wide, in all sectors combined. And the need is for a minimum of 25%, and it's actually, in Canada, they do 100%. They don't bother to mince around. They just say people are going to move and therefore every house needs to be accessible.
I think that's the way New Zealand needs to go for sure. You're so right. Housing is a huge issue within the disability community, which I think is why it has been made a priority outcome area for this strategy. Mm. Heartbreaking stories like the one you just told are unfortunately not as uncommon as they should be. And housing is such a basic human right that unfortunately a lot of disabled people do not have due to inaccessibility of, whether that be an inaccessible shower, stairs they can't climb up, or houses that are two levels. Housing is a huge issue.
So we come to principle 6, respect and dignity. And of course this is something that all people need. They need to have their basic worth acknowledged. I don't know what comment you'd like to make there, Amy.
I will say that unfortunately a lot of disabled people haven't been treated with respect and dignity their entire lives. For example, unfortunately, people with hidden and invisible disabilities, when seeking healthcare, often get treated in a way that is not respectful or dignifying. And that also extends outwards to everyday activities, with people getting stared at, snide comments. It's unfortunate that a lot of us don't receive the amount of respect and dignity we would offer others. And I think that goes for a lot of minority groups and also the aging population.
And Principle 7, Te Tiriti o Waitangi, which I think, to me, straight away, I think of the statistics for Māori and Pacifica for disability are very, very much higher than in the Pākehā community. Some of that's the type of employment they have been engaged in, particularly forestry, because of such a high injury rate. And it's very high in New Zealand compared with other countries. But anyway, I'm going to leave that open for you to comment.
The Te Tiriti o Waitangi is such a huge foundational document that it's right that it has been mentioned as a grounding principle of the strategy. As you said, the Māori population are more statistically more likely to face disability. And so we need to make sure that any support they receive is dignifying and respectful of their cultural background and te tiriti and of their beliefs surrounding disability. Māori people culturally have a view of disability that is so different to that of colonial views of disability, and so that needs to be respected. And also I think it needs to be shared more openly by that. And also I believe that we need to listen to it more and take more of it on, because it is such a amazing way to view disability. And I think that I would like more of us to be aware of it.
And so we come to elevating the conversation further, looking at, okay, the value of this document in terms of giving feedback to whai kaha, shaping up the final strategy, what it's going to look like. But I think also considering how it benefits everybody in New Zealand. For example, even in tourism, now that we've got aging populations in every country around the world, we actually find that if you're not catering for disability, well, if you don't have accessible spaces and you don't provide things that are all ability friendly in terms of activities, events and how you operate your tours and so on, then you're going to actually exclude quite a lot of your travelling population. And the countries that are doing well in tourism are the countries that are actually catering for the needs of an all-age-friendly and an all-disabilities-friendly approach.
Absolutely. Accessibility benefits everybody. Wider door frames don't just benefit wheelchair users. They could also benefit people who are pushing prams, someone who's pushing a wide trolley, people who are carrying large boxes. Ramps, same deal. They benefit parents with prams, people who are carrying a big box and can't see the stairs in front of them. Accessibility benefits everyone. And even if you aren't disabled, and or don't have a disabled family member currently, that may change in the future. You may end up caring for a disabled family member. You may end up having an injury that results in disability or an illness that results in disability. And so accessibility benefits everybody, and it safeguards our future as a population.
Yeah, and that's why we need more accessible housing, as well as accessible public spaces. We do also need to have exercise and events that are managed in a way that allows for participation and inclusion of everybody.
Absolutely. An example of an event that is extremely inclusive is a strength and balance class that is run by a local rec center. And even though it's kind of marketed towards the aging population as someone who has strength and balance issues and mobility issues caused by my disability, I attend this workshop on a weekly basis and it helps me keep mobile and fit. And so something that benefits the aging population benefits me and vice versa, because we have the same needs in the end. And I find it extremely unifying, even though I may be the youngest person in that room by decades. It's so nice to have a place where I can go where I know that the exercise will be modified for and my needs will be modified for as far as the workshop goes.
I'm sure too that the more we have participation and inclusion, the more we have unity and strength behind those who are struggling with disability or with different abilities. And that unity and strength that comes from attending a class where everybody's in it together and everybody's supporting everybody, that approach is just so valuable.
Absolutely. Community is huge and is a huge desire. Community is something that is hugely desired for by a lot of young disabled people, and it's amazing how you can find community in places you didn't think you would. And so the more accessible that spaces are to different groups of people, the more we can come together and create our own communities rather than just staying in our siloed areas, whether that be disability or aging population or any other group.
Yes, and what springs to my mind at this point is the wonderful development that's occurred on the shore for young people. The Shore Junction site as a venue for activities for youth, and it's mind-boggling. It's not just the level of resourcing. It's not just how exciting all the separate room spaces are, but the accessibility grabbed me right from the time I went in the door. When I saw a small insert into the reception panel in front of the main desk, and out pops this tray, and it's right at the height for somebody in a wheelchair to be able to sit and fill out their application form to join. How amazing.
Absolutely. Shore Junction is an incredible space and is the epitome and what to strive for as far as accessibility goes. There's so many different rooms, sewing, gaming, any interest you have, even dancing, and all of those spaces are accessible, whether that be regarding wheelchairs, whether that be mobility, all of those spaces are accessible, whether that be for wheelchair users or people who are neurodiverse and need a quiet space. And also they are accessible for people who want to rent the rooms for a while and use them for their own private project. I've seen so much amazing stuff come out of Shore Junction, and I think we need more spaces like it for sure.
And it's very interesting. It didn't actually need a strategy in order to get there. And a strategy is wonderful, but it's just a series of signposts about what might be possible. But when you actually have a live vision that's enacted, like they did with Shore Junction, you actually get not only enthused, but you get completely satisfied. Because you don't even have to think of something that's already in front of you. Someone else has thought of it. And it's just so amazing that someone can translate all of that dreaming big into something bigger than you could ever have imagined.
Absolutely. It's incredible how the youth that were involved in designing Shore Junction were told to dream big, and then they dreamed big. And Sonia Thursby looked at the plans and said, no, dream bigger. It's incredible how someone can encourage young people, young disabled people to dream bigger than they ever thought they could. It's hard to know what you're missing out on when you're missing out on it. And so Shore Junction is just a place where dreams have come true for so many young people.
And I haven't been back since my first visit in November last year, so I'm scheduled to go again this year in November, and I know I'm going to be surprised because there's going to have been so much more development since I was there.
Absolutely. It's constantly growing, constantly changing to fit the dreams of the youth there, that it, their dreams are also constantly changing. So it's keeping up, which is incredible.
So in terms of making comment and feedback, is it useful for people in the wider community who understand the needs of the disabled and perhaps the needs of an age-friendly city that we have a struggle to get? Is it worthwhile for a wider group of people to be submitting on this?
Yeah, absolutely. So whether you're a member of the youth community, the adult community, or the aging population, it's important to have our say. As I said before, even if you're not disabled at the moment, you may gain an impairment in the future or end up supporting a disabled family member. Accessibility benefits everyone and is the only way to future-proof our society for future generations. By giving feedback on how to make our environment and our society more accessible, we can make the vision of an accessible and equitable society a reality.
Okay, so this draft strategy, the feedback closes on the 28th of September.
Yes.
And if people want to look at what Yes Disability is saying, they can go to www.yesdisability.org.nz.
Yes, you can find us there. You can also find us and I.Lead on Facebook and Instagram. Our iLead website is iLead.org.nz. Regarding how you can have your say on the draft strategy, the draft strategy is available on the Faikaha website, and this includes multiple alternative formats such as easy read, large print, NZSL, Te Reo, and audio files. To submit your feedback, you can use the accessible online platform to submit a feedback form or video. Make sure you get in by the 28th of September, as said before, because that is when submissions close.
Thank you very much, Amy. And we've enjoyed having you, and we hope to have you again in the future. So, without anything further, I'm just going to say kia kaha, everyone. Have a good week, and we'll be back together next week.
Kia ora, thank you.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.
I'm out on the way, I'm watching your face.